This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm joined by Uncle.
Uncle? Arvind Yuvraj.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm just teasing you, of course. I'm more of an uncle than you are anyway. Now, we're going to be with you for about the next hour or so. So if you'd like to get in touch with the show, 018-789-8899 is the number to get us via WhatsApp. You can get us on Twitter and Instagram at
BFM Radio.
Now, we're asking you a question today. That question is, do you feel like your job is harming your mental health? Clearly it is me. That's why I'm referring to both of us as uncle today.
Uncles.
But we have some news about that and some of the things that perhaps you could do if that's the case. But we're also talking about a bunch of other stuff, aren't we, Arv?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about how the ugly side to working from home, you know, the pros and cons. Then we're also going to talk about how food businesses continue to pivot to survive FMCO.
Again, that question that we're asking is, do you feel like your job is harming your mental health? Yes, no, sometimes. Let us know on the polls over on Twitter at BFM Radio. Okay, so... In case you missed it, it was all of the news earlier this month. Naomi Osaka pulling out of the French Open, the tennis Grand Slam, of course, after she was fined by the organisers for refusing to speak with the press during the tournament. And she's long maintained that speaking to the press causes her huge anxiety. Haven't we all been Naomi Osaka at some point in our lives? You know, we might never know what it's like to be the second-ranked woman in tennis, of course, or the world's highest-paid female athlete. Mm-hmm. But like Osaka, many of us have been stuck in situations that were detrimental to our mental health at work or in our personal lives. Feeling torn between societal expectations and self-preservation, she chose to care for herself ahead of the French Open when she announced she would not do any press because news conferences could be damaging to the mental health of the players. And true to her word, after winning her first round match, she skipped her post-match news conference. She later explained in an Instagram post that she was feeling vulnerable and anxious, and press events gave her huge waves of anxiety. Her decision to avoid the press did not go over well with tennis officials. She was fined $15,000. And the leaders of the four Grand Slam tournaments, the Australian, the French, and the United States Open and Wimbledon, threatened to expel her from the French Open. So instead, she announced that she would withdraw from the tournament. She even wrote in her social media post, "The truth is that I have suffered long bouts of depression since the US Open in 2018, and I have had a really hard time coping with that." So regardless of the type of work you do, your job can affect your mental health and vice versa. And like Osaka, you've got choices when it comes to preserving and improving your well-being. So Benjamin F. Miller, he is the Chief Strategy Officer for Wellbeing Trust. It's a national foundation focusing on mental health and well-being. Put it really well. He says, "We'd not fault her if she had a sprained ankle. But when it comes to mental health, which we know is equally, if not more important than your physical health, we have this arbitrary standard of what's acceptable and what's not." Mm-hmm. So a survey of over 5,000 employees conducted last year by the advocacy group Mental Health America found that 83% of respondents felt emotionally drained from work, and 71% strongly agreed that the workplace affects their mental health. Women and people of color may shoulder a disproportionate amount of emotional stress, both in and outside of the workplace. Now, according to U.S. federal data, women are at least twice as likely to have had depression as men, and black men are less likely than non-Hispanic white people to receive treatment for depression or prescribed medications for mental health. A 2020 report from Lean In and McKinsey & Company noted that black women were less likely to get the support that they needed to advance in their fields than white women. And Osaka, who's of black and Asian descent, acted admirably when she stood up for her niece. Several mental health experts have come forward and said, "It can benefit all of us on the lookout for signs that we might need to change at work or get professional help." So look at evaluating your feelings. And according to psychiatrist Dr. Jesse Gold from Washington University in St. Louis, everyone has some awareness of their baseline functioning at work. So if you start to notice you're losing interest in your job or your productivity plummets, it's an indication that something is off. For example, You might notice that you dread starting work each day, or you feel so anxious that you've got trouble thinking about everything that you're supposed to do. Perhaps your emails are piling up and you aren't communicating with people as much as you typically should. If you're feeling ineffective in your job, you might also start to engage in more negative self-talk, like, I'm no good at my job anyway, I'm useless. Mm-hmm. Now, an even bigger warning sign that work is affecting your mental health is if work tanks your mood to the point that it starts to damage your personal relationships. For example, you might find that you're picking more fights with your partner, becoming more irritated by your kids, or avoiding social activities in ways that you normally wouldn't. Think about what might be causing these feelings. Is there one aspect of your job responsibilities that's causing most of your distress? Do you have an underlying health problem like depression that's not been treated? Is it some combination of the two? So you can get support. Once you realize you need help, seek out a trusted friend, a mentor or a co-worker, a peer group or a therapist. Many employers also offer employee assistance programs that have a variety of services, including short-term counseling from licensed therapists. You can also set boundaries. Once you've found a supportive person to hear you out, together you can start to come up with some game plan to improve your work life and emotional well-being. Think about what you need most. Is it an accommodation like short-term disability leave, or would it simply help to have more flexibility in your work schedule? Do you need to set limits as to when and how often you respond to work messages before addressing any of these mm-hmm. with your supervisor? Be sure to consider how your proposed solution should work with the context of your team, because that's what your employer wants to know as well. In other words, show how your idea will benefit the group as a whole. It's right, we've all been through this at some point, especially over the last year or so.
Yeah.
Ups and downs and not knowing what's happening and wondering why we feel the way that we do. It's not surprising at all, is it?
It's not. Also, when the news broke about Naomi Osaka and what she did, that was huge. Mm. I remember feeling, because it validates like so many people.
Yeah.
Like the article says that anxiety and even stress disorders and mental health is so vague. Like some companies, I think, find it difficult to tell you that you are not well or that you need help if they cannot quantify it. Because like a fever, you can see temperatures or you have a flu, someone knows you have the flu. Yeah. But with something like anxiety, like what's the measure, right?
Right.
So I remember reading that and then seeing the comments like on Twitter and then even on the news portals. A lot of people were like, this completely validates and it's such a big step for someone so famous and so prominent to come out and say something like this and to sort of pull out of like these massive tournaments because of anxiety, because of mental health.
And it's nice also to see the amount of backing that she's got from other sports stars and other celebrities and, you know, not just sports stars and celebrities, but a lot of people coming out and saying this. And it's not just Osaka as well. I mean, this kind of forced press media briefing thing for a lot of sports individuals has always been around. Mm. You know, and I know that in the NBA and whatever, they're forced to do these. And if they don't attend, they get fined huge amounts of money. Mm-hmm. And it just seems ridiculous. You're there to watch these individuals play or compete or whatever. You don't really want to hear them speak and just repeat stuff, you know, for rote. How does it benefit anybody?
I think that's the misconception of because they are part of the media, so they have to do all this like publicity and then press conferences and stuff. But people mistake that just because they are on TV for something, which is playing whatever they are good at, means that they are good at being on TV, which is not the same thing.
At all.
It doesn't mean that they are good at like social interaction or facing a crowd or answering questions in public, because they could say one wrong thing and the media can nitpick and sort of tear it apart and, you know, define it in 1,000 different ways.
Let's just rewind a few years and look at the first press conferences they had with David Beckham, right? Mm, mm. Do you remember those?
The ones in the 90s?
Yeah. Where he would come out and his voice had that high-pitched kind of shrill voice. He was not good at press conferences and he knew that. And he was mercilessly attacked by the British press.
For
his voice. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, had he not come out and spoken, again, he would have been mercilessly, you know, attacked by the press. Mm-hmm. So what does he have to do? He goes away, he has media training, he learns how to speak differently on one thing or another, and he comes out with this newfound confidence. But he shouldn't have to go through that. He should be just doing what he's good at, getting on the pitch and playing football.
Playing ball.
You know, and of course that's going to affect you mentally. If that's not what you've chosen to do, and all of a sudden you're like, right, you've got to go and do this. You've got to go. People don't want to do that.
No. You know? And also looking at like on a smaller scale, I think like mental health benefits or some channel to escalate mental health issues has to be a prerequisite or like a perk in most new companies. I think if you're looking for a new job and you go to a company where mental health is not factored into whatever perks and benefits they have or whatever plans they have, that's a red flag
that
the company's not up to date, or they need to change whatever they're doing for their employees.
Yeah, and it should also be, you know, one of those things that you can openly discuss in interviews as well. You know, how do you help people deal with mental health issues and something like that? That should be part of when you're going for that interview. You should feel comfortable about being able to ask questions like that. We're going to take a short break, folks. That is our question of the day. Do you feel like your job is harming your mental health? Let us know. Get us via WhatsApp 01878988899. Twitter or Instagram, we are at BFM Radio. We're going to take a short break with some music from The Hives with Go Right Ahead. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with a clinical psychologist about what you can do and should do when a colleague, an employee, or even yourself feel like your job is harming your mental health. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9.
Be free, Malaysians. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Yuvraj.
We're talking to you about when your job harms your mental health. If you just missed it, we were talking about Naomi Osaka, how she pulled out of the French Open. And if you've ever felt like your job might be harming your mental health, we've given you some tips about what you can do. Those things are evaluate your feelings, get support, and set some boundaries. We've asked you this question, though, at the beginning of the show. Do you feel like your job is harming your mental health? We gave you options over on Twitter. These are the options.
Yeah, the options are yes, no, and sometimes, so very simple. 48.1% for yes, 19.3% for no, and 32.6% for sometimes. So we can kind of assume that sometimes and yes, you know, they go hand in hand. So that's a huge 70% plus.
Yeah, which is pretty much mirrored over on Instagram as well, where we have 77% of people saying yes, it does. Of course, with 23% of you saying no. Do we have any tweets you want to highlight, Arv?
We have a tweet from Eric who says, my wife's job is affecting my mental health. I worry about the hours she has to work since work from home started. No downtime, even on public holidays or annual leave taken. She has to work until 1 a.m. most nights. Sigh.
Shouldn't be like that at all, should it? If you have thoughts and comments about this, get us via WhatsApp 01878988899. Twitter or Instagram, if you want to contribute that way, is at BFM Radio. Now, we did manage to get hold of a clinical psychologist. It's Dr. Joel Lau, the director and clinical psychologist at the Mind Psychological Services and Training. Now, why don't we take mental health issues at work as seriously as a physical injury?
I think one of the more common responses I've heard to that question is the idea that it's just not visible. You know, I think, you know, I've got clients who come to me before and say, you know, things like, oh, I wish I had something like a broken leg. I wish I had a cancer or something like that. Because even then, people would They will acknowledge it, because it's something that they understand and they can fathom what it is and they can see what it is, right? And they're more likely to react positively to, not positively, but they will react towards it. But with mental health, I think because people oftentimes try to put themselves in other people's shoes, right? They try and compare apples. They think it's apples and apples in that sense, right? And it doesn't work out that way. And I think that's why a lot of times people say, oh, I've been through hard times, you know, how come you can't handle it? How come I'm okay and then you can't, right? And I think when you start comparing like that, then it becomes very difficult. And I think that's why mental health gets a bad rep sometimes.
Joel, has there been any improvement at all, especially with the pandemic, on how seriously we should be treating mental health issues at the workplace?
Yeah, definitely. I think even before the COVID situation hit, so I've been doing this job for about 10 years now. I've been a clinician for about 10 years now, right? From when I first started, of course, there was a lot more stigma, a lot more misunderstandings about mental health. But in the past decade or so, you do see a lot more people opening up towards it, asking more questions, having more conversations about it. And I think it's also good access as well. I think a lot more people from a younger generation, you know, your Gen X and your millennials and so on and so forth, I think they're much more exposed to the idea of good mental health and what it can look like and what it should look like. And because of that, they have more conversations about it, right? I think, like it or not, Hollywood and TV shows have also played a big role in this, right? For example, that 13 Reasons Why. You know, it's obviously controversial in its own right, like, because of the topic and all that. But for me, I think that anything that can elicit good conversations about mental health is never a bad thing, right? In the past 2 years, especially during the COVID situation, when all of us were forced to work from home and a lot of us became a hybrid full-time parent and full-time employee at the same time, for example, I think that really this hammered it home, the importance of how important it is for us to be good and healthy psychologically and emotionally. So you definitely see a big uptick, especially in the work setting. A lot more companies are reaching out for EAP programs, employee assistance programs, workshops, training programs and things like that, right? To try and provide as much support as possible to the employees. So that's a really good improvement, I think, in the past couple of years.
And how can you tell if your job is starting to affect or harm your mental health? Are there warning signs?
Yeah. So typically in these kind of situations, we look out for a few key factors, right? And this has to do with the idea of functioning, right? From a clinical point of view, we look at two aspects. That's your social functioning and your occupational functioning, right? Social functioning means how effectively or how you socialize with other people, friends, family members, and all that. And occupational basically is how well you do your task, right? So if you're an employee, then how well you do your work. If you're a student, then how well you study and things like that, right? So when we look at these two aspects, what we're looking for is significant change, right? So if naturally I'm a much more extroverted person, I'm a jovial person, I talk to people, I laugh, make jokes and things like that, and suddenly you see a drastic turn of change, right? I'm isolating myself, I'm keeping to myself, I'm not interacting with people, I'm not reaching out. So when drastic changes like that occur, then that's the first flag that we notice, right? And we say, okay, look, something might be going on. It could be nothing. It could be that they're having a bad day or they just had a breakup with their partner, for example, perhaps something like that. But it's worth checking in, right? Same goes with occupational functioning as well. If they are usually quite a high-functioning person, pretty good output, good quality work as well, and you suddenly see a nosedive, it's probably something going on, right? And then there's something we want to check on and see. To be fair, it can happen both ways as well. If this person is like, you know, has a 60-70% output on their work, for example, and suddenly it shoots up to like 90%, 100%, again, they might be overcompensating by working harder, putting more work to distract themselves from family or girlfriends or boyfriends and things like that, right? So those are the drastic changes they want to look out for.
Mm-hmm. So while working from home, what can you do to keep in that healthy headspace? Because it can be challenging, and I mean like challenging all caps.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the best things that, and one of the best advices that we've been giving during this COVID situation, right, is to ensure that we have identified places for work and being at home, right? So when we used to be able to go to offices and travel to work and all that, there was very natural delineation, right? So when I get into the car or the train or the bus to get to work, that means I'm in transition right now. I'm going to work, and when I enter the office, means I'm at work. And when you're able to physically place yourself in a different location, it's quite a good way to switch your mind, so to speak. Like, I'm in work mode right now. I'm not in husband mode or dad mode or whatever it is, right? And similarly, we come back, we leave work at work, and then we come back to it. Obviously, there's some spillover here and there. We've got emails and WhatsApps, and it's not going to go away perpetually, but it helps, right? I think one of the biggest struggles when we work from home is that we blur that line. There is no clear distinction between work and home, right? So one of the best advice we've been giving of late is that you need to carve out a small space for you that's designated workspace, right? It doesn't have to be anything fancy like a home office or anything like that. It doesn't have to be. It could be just one particular seat in the house, one particular corner in the house that you just cordon off. So when you enter that imaginary boundary, so to speak, right, you're at work, right? And then you're doing work stuff. And when you step out of it, then you mentally tell yourself, okay, I'm outside of work, right? I'm not going to go to that corner until the next day or whatever it is. So that's one really good way to help you figure out the boundaries and clear your mind, so to speak. The other thing would be timetables, right? Because again, you know, when you're at work, you've got clear lunchtime, break times, off times and start times and things like that. Working from home, you don't. It's just one blur, right? Everything just mashes all together, right? So making sure that you have clear timetables, you know, what time do I start work, what time is my lunch break, and respecting that as much as you can also gives your head a bit of space to you know, carve out times. You know, this is my private time, personal time, this is my work time, and that's really helpful for you as well.
And from an employer's point of view, how should you address staff that come to you with these issues? There could be concerns over privacy, or they might worry about being discriminated against, right?
Yeah. I think from an employer's point of view, it's actually quite a hard thing to navigate, because I think a lot of employers, especially if you know your employees quite well and you're quite close to them, the desire to help is definitely there, right? And I think a lot of us do want to try and reach out to assist where we can. But I think the issue here is that it takes two hands to clap, right? If your employees need help, but they're reluctant to come in for help and rightly, like what you said, there's a lot of fear about repercussions or getting overlooked for promotions and things like that, right? And that's naturally going to act as a detriment from your employees to come in and look for you for help, right? So I think as an employer, one of the best things that you can do is to not be the not be the helpline, not be the one that people look to for help, but instead to prepare resources that your employees can get access to, right? So it's almost like a one layer in between kind of thing, right? And by doing so, you're going to allow them that freedom to speak their mind, so to speak, right? I think a good analogy to this would be, you know how kids, they can't tell their parents something, is this weird? But I can tell a favorite aunt, I can tell a cousin and things like that. It's a similar thing there, in that sense. So by having that bit of a space, right? So that means, okay, look, if you've got issues and you want to talk about it, I may not be the best person because of your own concerns and fears and whatnot, right? Here are some resources you can have access to. And right now, lots of centers, lots of companies have provided a lot of different resources that people can engage, either online or through video calls and things like that, to get them help, right? And if you want to go one step further, you can also engage with companies to do EAP programs and things like that. So immediately when the staff has an issue, they know who they can call up. If the company is able to, they're able to also subsidize some of the fees as well, which is fantastic, and then they can get the help that they need. So I think a lot of times for employers, the desire to help is there, but I think it has to be channeled in the right way. Don't try and save everyone because you're going to burn yourself out in the end, right? Which is not good. So perhaps preparing the resources, making sure they know where to go to, that might be the best thing for the employees.
Last question, Dr. Joel. Any advice for those listening who felt like they can't share their anguish or don't know how to help themselves? What can they do?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, right? I think if you ever wondered whether there is something amiss, whether there is something that is troubling you and things like that, the fact that you're asking that question probably means that there might be something going on. I think if you are lucky enough to have good friends and family around you, I think that should be your first port of call. Sometimes when we sit with our own minds and sit with our own thoughts and allow it to brew, it can be quite troubling because there's no outlet. So it acts like a pressure cooker almost, right? It just cooks and cooks and there's no release valve. So if you're lucky enough to have good friends and family whom you trust and whom you can speak to, that might be a good option, right? Speak to them, just vent some thoughts out and then talk it out. And sometimes just saying things out loud means that you can clear a lot of things in your mind, right? Which is great. The second thing that you can do is that if you, let's say, don't have that kind of friends and family, the familiarity with them, or if you've tried speaking to them, it doesn't really work, speak to someone, right? Like I said, there are many, many different resources out there. MMHA, for example, they provide online services, and I think they have a sliding scale system, for example. SoSelf is another one that's a really good place to go to as well. Reach out to them and speak to someone. I think best case scenario, you go to speak to someone and the therapist says, hey, you're fine, absolutely okay, you're just going through a stressful moment and right now, you're good to go. Great, fantastic, best case scenario. Worst case scenario, there is something going on. And hopefully we catch it early enough that it doesn't get bigger or get worse in that sense. So there's some things you can do.
Thank you. That was Dr. Joel Lau, the Director and Clinical Psychologist and at the Mind Psychological Services and Training. The question that we're asking today is, do you feel like your job is harming your mental health? Yes, no, or sometimes. If you'd like to contribute, get us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Twitter or Instagram is at BFM Radio. We have to take a short break. We are running out of time. Katrina and the Waves next with Walking on Sunshine here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.